So, Paul, for my first question for you is very simple. It's been 20 years since the last time I've spoken to you. You have done a lot with your musical career. So, what have you been up to for the last 20 years? It's great to have you on the show again and talk about your music career and what you've been doing.
I played on a lot of guest appeared on a lot of people's records. I did was on the Uli Roth tribute. It was a time there where people were doing a lot of tributes after the Liegelord thing. So I did the Uli Roth tribute. I did a Return to Fantasy for Century Media, a Uriah Heep thing with Joe Camo. We did Too Scared to Run. I did stuff for the Jason Becker Once in the Wilderness on Lion Records. And in between, I was touring and playing with everyone, you know, because I was a session guy. I went to Berkeley. I studied with Steve Vai, Mike Stern, Steve Kahn. So I was a fusion guy, a jazz guy, rock guy, blues guy. So I knew I wanted to do this as a living. So whatever the musical genre or style was, I had to adapt. And a lot of players did have to adapt, you know. So I did. And a large part of that was being a session musician. So I started recording. One of my sessions was recording for the XFL, the WWE Football League, you know, the wrestling football league. So I did all the cameo music, the stadium music, and all whatnot. And while I was in the studio doing that, Johnny Winter comes in, and he's getting ready to do the demos and the rough tracks for his later on to become On the Blues Man album on Virgin Records. So he hears me playing, and he says, "Wow, I like the way you play. You know, I need a song for my new album. Would you be interested in writing a song for it?" So I did, and he loved it. And he said, "Do you have another one?" So I wrote another one and another one. And he said, "You know, there's some other guitar parts in there. Would you be interested in playing on the record?" So I said, "Yes." So he said, "Well, since you're on the album, you should come and tour." So I said, "Okay." And it just went on, and a friendship formed, and we toured the world, you know, about 140 to 180 shows a year. Put out two more recordings with, you know, myself, Johnny, playing with Eric Clapton, Edgar Winter, Vince Gill, Billy Gibbons, Warren Haynes, Derek Trucks, Susan Tedeschi, Jimmy Vivino, Ben Harper, Dr. John, everybody. And the last album, I got a Grammy for a couple of years ago. And this is in between, you know, touring China and playing on David Letterman and all that kind of stuff, Jimmy Kimmel. And Johnny passed, and I got him his first Grammy for his first solo album, and it charted in the top 10 on Billboard. So then that led to other producing work. I just got nominated for another Grammy last year for Joe Louis Walker's album. And I work with a lot of bands. I got signed with Sony Records, so I'm touring myself. I put out my album, Badass Generation. I got some great musicians on there. And things have been great. I'm going out next week, and I'm starting a whole nother tour in the Midwest, going up to Canada, going all the way down the East Coast. I just did that, all the way down the Florida Keys and back up, Alabama, Delaware, everywhere. So things are good. You know, it couldn't be better, actually. So I'm playing with a lot of artists, doing a lot of shows, doing a lot of guesting on albums, producing a lot of albums, you know, just doing everything. The phone never stops ringing, so I'm very thankful for that, and I've been very lucky. So, and then there's a couple movies, documentaries that I'm in that came out. One's called Sideman, Long Road to Glory, with myself and Hubert Sumlin and Johnny and Greg Allman. And then there's the Johnny documentary called Down and Dirty about Johnny's life and my portion of his life and helping him out with his career and whatnot. So that's the tip of the iceberg, but that's what's been going on. It hasn't stopped since our first interview. You know, and obviously the Liegeord stuff was a big part of it. You know, it started off those two albums. They're in the history books, that kind of thing. Proud of that. And then it just kept going. You know, music changed a little bit, and I changed with it. Mm-hmm. But the change went in the direction that I was already in. So, you know, it went towards blues. So it was real easy. It went towards rock. Now it's a 70s kind of retro vibe, which I love. You know, so everything's good.
You know, I went and listened to some of the tracks on the Master Control album, and I listened to your songs. There's a much different feel to them than, you know, the rest of the album. They have a very good sense of melody to them. And when I listen to the music you're doing now, even though it's really not metal, I still hear that same melodic sense and those melodic overtones that you have always had, even when you were doing the Liegeord thing, and the music that you, and now you're doing it, the music that you're doing now, and it always seems like that's a sense of, that melodic sense has never left you.
Well, I appreciate that. I like that you saw it. Yeah, the way we worked it out with those albums was Joe would write the lyrics, Joe Camo, and I would write the music. So we figured we'd do that. So that's how that works. So yeah, it was a 50-50 split on a lot of those, the way we did that. Mm-hmm. And then the band as a whole, our team writing thing, we would do three songs or four, and then the other two guys would do three or four. So we each did about three or four, you know, on our own and put them all in. Mm-hmm. But the melodic sense comes from, you know, what I studied, where I learned, who I studied from. So yeah, I love melody. I love writing solos that are songs within themselves. I love writing I like writing songs that catch the listener. That's just not, you know, just not a showcase for riffing. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a lot of riffing back then, but you know, just something that had staying power and had some emotion to it. So on my new stuff, I actually write the lyrics and the music, but yeah, that sense of melody has always been there. Otherwise, it's just showing off. There's nothing, you know, I like a good Jimmy Page solo. I like a good AC/DC solo, something that you can air guitar to, mm-hmm. if you're just talking about solos. But then also the verses have to have some sense of melody, and the lyrics have to tell some kind of story. You know, I mean, that's true with every writer and every composer of music. You know, they're all thinking that, but right. You know, the song length, my songs were less, not 50 parts thrown together and just trying to connect them. They had form to them, song form. There were verses and choruses and certain structures that made them more song-like and actually made them hold the test of time and last longer, you know?
Right.
So there's a formula for writing a hit. I mean, there's people churning it out in Nashville like crazy. And that is, you know, certain way of where a verse goes, certain intro, certain this and that. And then you input your information into this song form, and it always works. And the songs end up being, you know, 4 minutes, four and a half, that kind of thing. And you can still tell your thing, but at least it's not so infinite. You don't get writer's block. You know you're working in this certain area.
Right.
And then all your learning and all your studying, your chords and your harmony and your all that comes out, and you put it in an organized form, and then it starts developing. And then, you know, you add stuff to it and layer it and add the lyrics. And you know, it's not done until it's done. So you just have to know, and especially like I produced my own stuff, my last record, you have to be careful because you could stay in that studio for 10 years, you know, it's not ready yet. So you have, there comes a point where you say, okay, this is it. And you get a feeling. But yeah, I've always had a melodic sense. I mean, even the reviews of my stuff in like Guitar World and all those magazines, they're like bluesy melodic feel, because I listened to blues guys in the beginning, mm-hmm. and I listened to melodic music. So no matter how heavy it got, it was always blues based. It was always, you know, Hendrix or B.B. King or that kind of thing. That's what I listened to starting off. So, you know, musicians are like sponges. So whatever they hear, it's going to come out. So if I listen to nothing but Yngwie, you know, that's what I would sound like. But I listened to a lot of artists, and that, you know, that was, and Lee's Lord was, that was my introduction to record labels and radio stations and putting out albums. So that was the start of what would soon later on become a lot of albums. and then eventually the Grammy, which was a huge honor.
Still here with Paul Nelson, formerly of the band Liege Lord, and now the Paul Nelson Band. You know, the song that always gave me that melodic sense, the song that always gave me that vibe was the song Broken Wasteland off of the Master Control album.
I knew it. Yeah, that's the one. There's classical changes in there. There's right. melody. There's, yeah. And even the vocal line follows the chord structure that way. Yes. Yes, those were purposeful. Feel the blade. Yeah. Uh-huh. Absolutely. that's what I was thinking about. And there's structure. The
right.
verses are a certain length. The chorus is a certain thing. But within there, there's a melody, something catchy. And you have to be very careful, because with that heavy stuff, it's like, well, you don't want it to get too sweet, too pretty. But at the same time, it has to make some melodic sense. I mean, even a good Iron Maiden song or whatever, Accept or Priest or whatever, Sabbath, there's a melody there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, da na 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 na
na na.
I've always thought that. And what your melody is based on, you know, what kind of sound you have or what kind of mood you're in or what kind of key the song is in. But that one in particular, that had a lot of melody in it. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, that was the one.
You know, back when I first talked to you and had you on the show, was a different era. It was a different time, because I would get these. I would get a couple, 2 to 3 CD promos a week and press releases a week from bands. But now it seems like I get tons of all these digital promos and all these bands are struggling because of downloading. And in your viewpoint, how has the music business changed compared to, let's say, 20 years ago when you and I first actually talked? And how have you been able to, as an artist as well, how have you been able to really still keep making a living at music? You know, how have you been able to persist and still make a living playing guitar where most people have struggled over the years?
Well, perseverance. I kept at it, and I built a name for myself, which helps, which makes one more bookable, and I got lucky, and I played with the greatest guitar player in the world. That helped. But beyond that, the scene right now is a mess. Mm-hmm. It's an absolute mess. And what's causing it is, and there's plenty of venues, but there's no middle ground. It's either bands playing for next to nothing, busting their ass, going club to club, getting paid peanuts to play their music, or these high-end musicians that are playing these giant festivals and that kind of thing. The bad artists are getting weeded out because people want to see talent. They want to spend their good earned money on something good. So in a sense, that's a good thing. There's like a cleansing thing going on, because it's like, okay, people don't have the kind of money to spend on as much as they'd like to. So when they buy a ticket, the show better be good. Social media is great. It's the best time. I heard this said that it's the best time to advertise and to promote, and the worst time to make a living.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's got all the social medias. Oh, they got all that together. But there's tons of bands that have the same thing.
Right.
How do you make it? Yeah, it has to be something different. You have to stick out. Bands that have lasted the test of time, that have built a name for themselves, can always come back in, back out. There's always people that are, hopefully, there's always people that want to relive that experience, or maybe something will come back around and be in vogue again. You know, there's like a 20-year cycle that stuff happens. I mean, even metal stuff comes back and people collect it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they collect it. I don't know if they want the same people, but it gets morphed into whatever sound they're listening to. But it's very hard for a lot of musicians I've talked to recommend to other musicians, is this something that I should get into as a career? Because the competition, well, it's not that the competition is there. The top end of the totem pole is not as busy and as not as many people as you would think, because it's not that many people giving up their whole life just to play and practice like there used to be. So you either have the artists that have done it for so long and they're great and they're established, or the ones that just have this amazing talent and just get thrown in and move up quickly. But it's very hard for people that are just starting from scratch to do it. Now, the other musicians that have been around for a while, like I said, if they have a band name or something, they always have to go back to that band name. People want to see the original members. They don't want things changed as much. You know, there's always, oh, it's not the same. It's not what it used to be. And another interesting thing that I heard from a group that I work with, matter of fact, they're in Europe right now. They're going on tour with Blackstone Cherry, a band called Otis. And they said to me, you know, the same thing. You know, it's really difficult today for artists to make it. And I said, yes, I know it is. You know, you've got to build up. They go, oh, but it's different in another way. And I go, what do you mean? And they said, well, you know, bands build their name by supporting national acts, you know, bigger groups. Mm-hmm. So that's how they get their start. If you're on a national tour with a couple dates with a giant band, but they said, but they're all dying. I go, we can't open up for Johnny Winter. We can't open up for B.B. King. We can't open up for this one, that one. In the past 3 years alone, we have lost so many major artists. It's making it difficult for budding artists to show their wares, because there's less. Not everybody can jam with ZZ Top. Not everybody can open up for Buddy Guy. Mm-hmm. There's only so many dates. So many artists, I didn't even think of it that way. You know, I was just like, wow, all these great artists are leaving us. But these were the springboards for other artists, and it's happening in every genre. So now what's happening is that support acts are opening up for other support acts. Mm-hmm. And there's no promotion in that. There's no, well, did you open up for some, you know, and bands are built on who they supported. Everybody has worked with, shared the stage with, been on, you know, that's, how do you entice a record label? How do you entice a booking agent? You know, it's very hard. Mm-hmm. In order to get a record deal, you need a manager. In order to get a manager, you need to show that you're playing and that you're going to make income for everybody. So he has something to work with. So each thing needs the other thing, but it's hard to get just one of them. It's hard to get a manager. It's hard to book an agent. Hard to get a record deal. And you need one to put the other one in place. And that's what's difficult. So everybody runs the social media, and they, oh, I got the, you know, 20,000 likes and this and that. That doesn't mean shit, really. People are getting this false sense of popularity and thinking that, you know, a certain amount of hits on a faith, it's nothing. You got to get in the millions to even get noticed, or to get on, you know, America's Funniest Home Videos or something. You know, mm-hmm. it's or on the news, or you know, Tosh 1.0 or whatever the hell. You know, that's the only way, in the millions. And that's because, you know, a cat ate a bird or something. That's not for, you know, to promote someone's career. So it's very tough.
Right.
In a lot of different ways. And just to get, I mean, we're coming out of music matters, put music in the schools, music helps education, it helps your brain power, playing piano when you're three, you're going to be as smart as, Hawkins. And then all of a sudden, these people study and they play and they spend all their time honing their craft and learning their instrument, and then they come out in the real world, it's like, where do I play? Okay. And then you have all these clubs, these venues, and it's rough. You know, you have to connect all the dots and be able to tour, put a tour together. And if you want to make this a career, it's very rough. So one of the things is, people like myself will join established bands. You know, there'll be an opening for this band or that band, a lot of stuff like that. Or we get into producing or Pro Tools or, anything. I've always said that I'd always be happy if I was just under the umbrella of music. You know, I don't leave that realm because I love music. I love the people associated. I love the business end of it. I love the musical end of it. Mm-hmm. You know, I can play one day. I can work a record deal the next day, that kind of thing. And it's not spreading myself thin. But, you have to really network now. And nobody taught us that in music school. Or for those that didn't go to music school, your guitar teacher, your personal music teacher didn't teach you that, or nobody set you up for this. So it's very tough, very tough. But fortunately, on the bright side, I'm doing fine. So we're good. Like I said, my phone doesn't stop ringing, and I'm going on tour, and I'm all good. But I wish there was more opportunities, and musicians were getting treated a lot fairer than they are. Mm-hmm. The ones that deserve it,
right?
You know. But the ones that don't deserve it, they get up there quickly, and in the long run, they get found out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say, well, when you get the call, that call in business, no matter what it is, when you get the call, then you're in. No, when you get the call, you better have your shit together, because the call is just the beginning. You can get dumped a week later because you got the call and nobody likes hanging around with you because you're just a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or you don't have enough to last. You may have enough talent to get them interested, but do you have enough staying power to put out record after record after recording after recording after recording? So that's where training and musicality come into it. And when you're good enough, people talk.
Right.
You know, the musicians, there's a network. You'll say to somebody, wow, I saw this guy. He's unbelievable. You should get him with him. Yeah. But like you were saying, beforehand, people will remember you and they remember this. Yes, you're part of that network.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're in the trenches as the press, and you talk to all these musicians, and they tell you, hey, I'm working with so and so and so and so, but boy, man, I could use another guitar player. What's the first thing you do? You recommend. So we all knew that.
Mm-hmm.
So sure, we remember your name and everybody else's name because it was all part of the system, part of the friendships were developed, business relationships.
Right.
You know how many albums are made at giant festivals behind the scenes? You know, when we did the Crossroads thing with Johnny, with Clapton, that's how I got the Roots album together and Step Back. I mean, we're all taking names. Hey, would you like to be on Johnny's record? If he plays on Leslie West's album, yeah, I'll do it. So you don't know what albums are coming out of these interviews. Could be, or relationships, or artists getting together. You know, or when somebody says, "Hey, oh, you talk so good. Tell him I said hi." How many times have you gotten that?
Right, right.
Oh, tell him I said hi. Oh, I heard you mention my name. Are you playing? Oh, yeah. That one little thing, if people knew how to work that correctly, could be an album a year from now. And you were responsible for it.
Right.
Just by saying, hey, shout out from so-and-so. Oh, good. Really? He said he liked my playing? I'll give him a call. So things like that. And that's what they don't teach you. I know I'm rambling on, but there's your answer. That's what's going on.
Well, you know, it's interesting because it's one of the artists, I think it might have been Blackie Lawless from Wasp, told me a few years back that record companies lost the ability to move very, very large groups of people. And then what ended up happening was that the business failed because the traditional business model, you couldn't use that anymore. And, you know, they never really adopted anything after that.
Nope. Well, we've lost, and that's, well, I'm hoping that's come back. We've lost the front man. There's no more frontmen. There's no more rock bands with frontmen. They're all hiding behind a guitar. They're all guitar players that all of a sudden started singing about a year ago. Mm-hmm. they're rock and blues guys and all. It's like, what? You're singing now? I mean, there's no Freddie Mercury and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, we're losing, and I don't see any coming out. But I think that will change because people are very into the British rock scene now, the retro 70s. They're all into Paul Rogers. They're all into Free. They're all into that kind of stuff. So, and that's huge over in Europe. So that's coming back. That's why I did the album that I did. I got this singer, Morten Fredheim, that I had produced years ago. Or actually, 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And he was number two on The Voice. And oh, my God. And that's I loved working with a singer.
Yeah.
It was one that can really belt it out, and that was a pleasure. But I will tell you that record companies, they look at SoundScan, which is, you know, like the Nielsen ratings for how many people are buying your stuff, and it gets registered as you sell each one. But it's not a perfect science, because what you sell on the road, if you don't send in what you've sold, it doesn't register. So, but record companies, I don't think people are liking on Facebook as much as they used to. A like is more valuable now because people know when they hit the like button, they're going to get all that crap from that artist and the, mm-hmm. you know, the 50 other ones they liked. So people are very stingy with their likes. So it's harder to accumulate a massive amount, and I think people are starting to get sick of Facebook because it's kind of turning old school. Now they're heading towards Instagram and Twitter more because they don't want to be bombarded with all this, the picture and the photo and all the friggin' this and that. Instagram and Twitter just allow you to post everything that you want to say in a few words or one sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So it's even people, the information that they want it even quicker and even less. So Facebook looks like a novel compared to an Instagram post or a tweet. So you're seeing that happening too, and people are trying to build that up. But you lose the visualness for the musicians in the that's allowed in Facebook, and that's still minimal.
Right.
But record companies are really looking at how many Facebook likes are accumulated, even more than SoundScan, because it really takes a lot for a band to earn 30, 40, 50, 100,000, half a million, a million. You know, if you have a million likes on your page, something's up.
Right.
And that means if you sold 1% of that in album sales, you'd pay for the first pressing of any vinyl or any CD that would make the company back an independent company. So for independent bands, that's good. But like I said, that full sense of security, you know, what's happened is all these social media platforms have made people equal in areas where they shouldn't be yet. And that's not meant as an egotistical thing, but they haven't earned the right to be at the level of the groups that they're at the same level at, only because they signed up for the same Facebook platform.
Mm-hmm.
And they get this false sense, well, if they can do it, I can do it. And that, you know, that's cool, you know. But just because you're looking at a, you know, if we're talking metal, if you're looking at an Iron Maiden page with a billion hits, or if you're looking at something like that, and you're starting off, it doesn't mean you're the same. So when you approach a record company and you say, when you approach a label and you say, hey, you know, we got 3,000 likes. It's like, what? Okay. It's pretty bad. So that's one thing. Another thing that's really bit everyone in the ass is this, I'm going to do it all on my own, and I don't need the label. I don't need management. I don't need a booking agent. I can do it all myself. And it's not right. And what happened there was musicians that were successful, that were making all this kind of money, were running around saying, you know, it's about the art. It's about the, which it is. But the problem is they gave up-and-coming musicians the false sense of, you know, don't go to a label. Don't do this. Watch out for this. Because they were making so much money, they were afforded the luxury to be able to say, you know, screw this, screw that, this, that. Yeah, but they're still getting the checks, you know? So there's only one or two that slip through the cracks and they end up on the cover of some magazine. Did it all on their own, sold it out of their trunk and became the biggest. Right, all right, so that's, the odds of doing that are astronomical. But there's a reason why there's management. There's a reason why there's a booking agent. There's a reason why there's a label. And there's a reason why they work so, when they do work, they work so perfectly together. It's like an orchestration. Everybody's happy, and the publicist is contacting the venues before you get there, and the people are showing up, and your social media is working, and then the booking agent is booking more shows because these did well, and then all of a sudden the record label is selling stuff, and they sign you for another album, and then their promotion. Well, that, if you do it on your own, the first thing you say is, how come I'm not getting enough gigs? Why? How come every time I call a record label, they hang up on me? Because your manager didn't call. I don't need managers. I can do this myself. I've been doing this on my own. Yeah, there's something about someone calling on your behalf rather than you doing it that just says, this group is so important that someone else believes in them and is getting paid to do it. So they must be worthy of a listen.
Right.
Yeah, so there you go. That's what's going on everywhere. And I get calls every day, and I get people asking me to help them with their careers, and, you know, will I talk to this label, or can I refer them to this book? And